the quest for a practical teaching machine. There have been many attempts to organize and teach knowledge. These flashcards used for storytelling have been in existence for more than 3,000 years. The oldest deck is on the left, the newest on the right. The cards below are the major concept cards. The minor concept cards are the ones we use for card games. One use of the minor concept cards is to teach basic counting and math. The major concept cards describe the organization of energy as it becomes matter. These are ancient flashcards, were used for storytelling before there were printed books. They were the first widely copied educational system. I first learned of these cards in 1970, while upgrading a recording studio in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. It was widely known that I had been working with the University of Wisconsin's Psychology Department, the Milwaukee Public Museum, and the Jewish Vocational Center since 1967 on various teaching devices and aids. One day, one of the musicians who was recording at the studio, Connie Bardow, handed me the center deck below as a present and said, "Here. This is the best teaching machine ever created." He may be right. The cards teach that all of nature manifests itself as a repeating set of patterns. The same template can be applied to many different sciences and situations. Electronics, chemistry, hydroculture, metallurgy, crystal growth, physiology, intentional communities, physics, education, sound, etc. I resisted other temptations and set my focus on the science of sound. My goal, the perfect outdoor sound system. I later would build one for the world's largest and longest-running music festival, Milwaukee Summerfest. Before, I fully understood quantum mechanics and the structure of the card deck. The cards do, in fact, provide a project outline and an effective tactical approach for constructing a proper sound system. Learning the system. Most of us here on planet Earth acknowledge a supreme intelligence, the originator of all. The common story is that he worked for 6 of his days and laid awake for 6 nights, to the point it wore him out so much that he needed to take a day of rest and let his creation finish his job. The story I was told was that he was planning a big party and wanted lots of guests and a wonderful setting in which to hold the event. As I recall, the last thing he said before he fell asleep and started dreaming was, "My children, remember it was I who brought all this into being, and it is my dream that makes the scheme. Remember me and the rules of the game. Remember that this is all of my personal being. For yourselves know love and give to each other. Treat all that is around you like your sisters and brothers. Learn who you are and then learn to love you. Then do to the others as you would have me do for you." I then saw him drift off to sleep, and there before my eye, I saw an image grow to complete, a body, a soul and a sky. It was there in all its beauty, and called me to come within, so that from the dream, I might learn the nature of this him. I saw wheels turning, and globes start to spin. It was done with such precision, that all I could do was grin. And slowly I saw a pattern, a puzzle did begin, with many pieces waiting, wanting to be one again. And then I was quite startled, as there it did begin. A dance of puzzle pieces, it created quite a din. The din came to order, and music did begin, a sea of harmonies came to be, with little ones within. A musical universe, it appeared to me, and words then did arise, to praise the one who made it all, the land, the sea, the skies. The universe is in fact, at its base, so simple, that only a child mind can truly understand it. What could possibly be of more value to a person than knowledge about his being and the biosystem in which he lives? To know that his spirit and body are engaged in a continuous process of renewal, and that one can personally take conscious control of the processes of growth and healing. We understand our atomic world as a system of building blocks that we now know how to take apart and put together. This knowledge allows us to manufacture new resources for creating new living environments for all of God's children. Let's all be then, God's children, the best that we can be, and learn what all He made for us, and all there is to see. Click here for an inspirational psalm signed by Donna Summer. State of Independence. Max Planck wrote, "A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die, and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it." The Egyptian Pharaoh. The Egyptian carol allegedly represents, according to classical occult tradition, the total amount of knowledge possible in the past, present, and future of the human race on this earth. The tarot images were usually carved on the columns of the most secret initiatory temples of Egypt, deep underground. Moses borrowed ideas from them for his sacred books. The tarot is not a spiritual conception or system like the doctrines of Christ, Vedanta, Islam, or Buddhism. But strangely enough, in the ultimate depths of its ideas one can't see the dawn of the immaterial light, independent of all the three worlds in which Hermeticism operates. The basis of the tarot is the three planes well known to all occultists. 1. The physical world of dense matter with all its various forms of life, inhabitants, laws, and possibilities. 2. The world of the more subtle concentration of matter, which far exceeds the finest physical ones, known as gases, radiant, and so on. It is called the plane of emotions, or the astral world. Invisible to the ordinary eye, this vast region extends and penetrates into all physical matter. Outer vehicles of consciousness also include an astral counterpart as well as the mental one, but generally we are unable to operate consciously and deliberately with either of these two subtle bodies without self-training and discipline. It is unlike the physical one, which seems to be fairly well under control, since we can move it, perform innumerable activities, feel it, see it, and so on. A physical liaison with the astral counterpart is located in the solar plexus. 3. This is a still more subtle combination of matter that corresponds to vibrations of the power we call mind, and whose visible physical conductor is the brain. The tarot is neutral, neither good nor evil in itself, just like figures that can express any quantity, suitable or unsuitable, true or false. The whole system is based on the universal principle that manifests itself in every sphere of life. We may call it the law tetragrammaton of Hermetists. The symbols used are letters of the old Hebrew alphabet, plus figures and numbers. 3 veils for 3 worlds. This is comfortable, for knowing the meaning of such a letter symbol, etc., that is the fixed idea behind it, we can operate, just as a mathematician does with algebraic formulas and terms. It is also very valuable for those who, being tired of the usual occult dangling that occurs at the present time, want to found their studies on a firm basis, without sacrificing their reason and logical thinking. The great law, which I have mentioned, is the same for all the three worlds in which we may employ the tarot. 1. If there is any manifestation in time and space, this does not necessarily mean only the three-dimensional physical space, then there must be first the acting element or power that initiates or begins the process. We symbolize it by the figure 1, and letter Yod. This element is positive, dynamic, and active. The picture on the first arcanum or trump of the tarot represents a man, standing with one leg crossed. He is sometimes called a magician. The same three qualities, as given above, are ascribed to and connected with the figure 1 and the letter Yod. 2. Apart from the active primary principle or, as some would prefer, creation, there is still a second element necessary for manifestation, which element being the receptacle, a screen, something to serve as a basis or fulcrum for the active Yod. This element is passive, negative, and material. Its number is of course 2, the Hebrew letter He, and the picture on the card is of a seated woman. 3. When Yod acts upon He, the third principle appears, having the number 3, and letter Vav. It is the result of the action, and it is neutral, reflecting in itself the qualities of the first and second trumps of the tarot, just like a child depending upon its parents. 4. The primary 3 as a whole forms a new unit, the first family, metaphysically conceived on the most subtle plane of being, next after the unmanifested, the immaterial absolute. This element bears the number 4, its letter is the second He. This letter is not passive as in the second arcanum, but active, being the Yod of the next triangle. It is essential to realize this, for only then can the mighty idea of the tetragrammaton Yod, He, Vav, He, be properly understood. Incidentally, the reader has probably noticed that the tetragrammaton is identical with the biblical, mysterious name of God. The fourth trump creates a new unit triangle, as was stated above, producing new, more complicated forms of manifestation in the gradually arising, more densely material lower worlds. This law works on every plane of existence. In the abstruse, or abstract realm, we already had a look at it. On the astral plane, for example, it can be expressed as impulse 1, plus astral surroundings 2, creates emotion 3. The whole will form what we call experience, or the emotional process in man. Man Yod, wife he, and child Ba, are a unit second he of a new quality and of extended activity for able to repeat the primordial process in a wider field. The first four form the primary symbolical triangle of the tarot. Its upper point is 1 equals Yod, left is 2 equals he, right is 3 equals Ba. The point placed in the middle of this triangle, being also the first point of a new one, is 4 equals second he. It is equal to the Yod of the first projection of force. To this come new seeds, as in the first case, a new 2 equals he, while 3 equals Ba, and so on. On this scheme are constructed 7 mystical triangles, of the 22 major arcana of the tarot. Each one has a different meaning and relation to the manifested world. On it is also based the whole numerology of Hermeticism. You should think of the major arcana as being a base 22 counting system, with 0 being a real number. Because any number can be reduced to one of the primary four, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, the process is usually called the theosophical addition or reduction. Add all the figures of the particular number until they reach the single figured one. Because it is necessary for you to know the meaning of all the figures beyond the four of the first triangle, you should know how to build the second and third triangles, using the method described above. Extending the principles, you find that the odds are 1, 4, 7, that is active, positive, male. The first key, 2, 5, 8, negative, passive, female. Ba, 3, 6, 9, neutral, with balanced elements of Yod and He in them. The number 10 is of course Yod, because 10 equals 1 plus 0 equals 1. Proceed the same with all the following numbers that make up the system. It is presumed that even the beginner student of the tarot has firmly memorized all that you have just read and that he knows exactly the meaning of all the 22 major arcana, as well as their symbolic cards and hieroglyphs. Unless these concepts are well established in one's mind, no study is possible. There is another basic operation with the major arcana, and an example may be illuminating. But instead of addition, we will now use analysis. As you already know to a certain degree about the first triangle, we may take, say, the third trump, then 3 equals 1 plus 2. We may read this equation, in its physical realm, as, child 3, has in itself element 1 father, and 2 mother. You may continue the same for other two planes. The fourth trump. In it, 4 equals 3 plus 1. This time we may take the mental plane meaning of the analysis and we read, new creation 4, proceeds from the foregoing evolutionary unit 3, when a new active element 1, has been added. As you may see, the possibility of creating exact and new conceptions with the help of the tarot's numerology is practically unlimited. Try to calculate how many combinations you can arrange of all the 22 arcana, when even with a low numerical value, as for example, that of 4, you can already obtain the following equations. 4 equals 3 plus 1. 4 equals 2 plus 2. 4 equals 1 plus 3. 4 equals 2 plus 1 plus 1. And so on. Please, observe the patterns and differences between these three decks of cards. Here are some special stories with lessons. In my travels, I've been told many stories. Sometimes, I wish I would have written them down, while they were still fresh in my mind. The wisdom in some of the stories tends to grow with time, as we gain personal experience. There have been a couple of times, when I wish I would have remembered the wisdom to help me out in similar situations. One story that has constantly come to mind throughout the years is the one I call, All at Once. This little story was told to me by an engineer who did consulting work while I was working with him on a project in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. A company called him in to analyze a problem they were having with one of their processes. After due study and investigation, he submitted his report. The project manager, upon reading the report, somewhat angrily responded that they had already tried all the suggestions presented in the report. The engineer's reply was, "You need to do all these things, all at once." The bill he submitted went unpaid. About a year or so later, the engineer happened to meet the project manager, and inquired as to the status of the project he had consulted on. He was told that the process had finally been perfected. The engineer then asked what they had done to make the process work. The project manager somewhat hesitantly enumerated the steps that they had gone through to perfect the process. Upon hearing the list, the engineer said, "Isn't that exactly what I told you to do?" About a week later, a check arrived in the mail, as payment for his original report. I'd seen the relevance of this story, more perhaps than any other, appear time and time again. There is possibly no greater grain of wisdom that can be shared with others. All aspects of creation and life are comprised of a system of parts and factors. Our success depends on us realizing the complexities of each situation and addressing all the factors, all at once. This holds true whether we are pursuing a spiritual path, emotional stability, or are working with physical matter. We must address and nurture all the elements, all at once. Knowing where to tap. This story was told to me by another engineer and involves a large power plant. At this plant there had been some downsizing and the head of the maintenance department and others were forced into early retirement. One day a problem developed, and the plant went offline. The company was losing many thousands of dollars an hour. The young college graduates, hired to replace the old-timers, were at a complete loss as to what the problem could be. All the gauges read normal, and yet the system wouldn't run. They finally called in the old-timer to see if he could fix the problem. After feeling a couple of pipes, he took a hammer from his toolbox and tapped on a valve, and the system sprung to life. Upon receiving the old-timer's bill, the plant manager called to complain. You sent us a bill for $1,000, and you were only here for 10 minutes, and all you did was hit a valve with your hammer. The old-timer said he would resubmit his bill. When it arrived it was itemized, as follows. Tapping on valve, $10. Knowing where to tap, $990. Total, $1,000. I have fixed hundreds of things by knowing where to tap. No amount of schooling or book learning can teach a person these skills. These skills come as a result of working in the real world and day-to-day experiences. In the past, these skills were passed along to the young through years of apprenticeship. No society that ignores the wisdom of its elders will long survive. When you see downsizing, be afraid. Be very afraid. Fix what is broken. This next story is one we should make sure all politicians learn before taking office. This engineering problem involves what is known as a vibrating table. Surfaces with vibrators attached beneath are used for hundreds of different applications. The consultant was called in to analyze a series of failures that a company was having with one of these tables. A support member on one table had broken. Maintenance then came and installed a bracing piece across the break. It wasn't long before the bracing piece broke. They then installed a heavier brace. That one broke in less time than its predecessor. So, they installed an even heavier one, and it quickly broke also. Again they tried installing additional braces to the sides. This fix failed also, and made the table nearly unusable from a performance standpoint. The fix replaced the original piece that broke with a better piece of spring steel. The table's design was a good one. There was just a tiny flaw in one of the pieces of steel that caused it to break after years of performing well. Adding braces degraded the design and brought additional failures. The main lesson here involves viewing dynamic systems differently than static ones. If the system had been a static one, then the added brace would have been functional. However, the table was dynamic. It was moving and its base wasn't. That means everything in between the tabletop and the floor had to be able to freely move. In this case, adding the brace inhibited the free movement and added additional stress points. New failures occurred at these stress points. Moral, if you have had a good system going, don't attempt to repair a minor failure by adding a patch job. We are all connected. Not many stories from college lectures have stayed in my mind over the years, but this one has always intrigued me. An experiment was designed to determine if telepathic communication between people was possible. Two experimental booths were constructed surrounded by Faraday shields. Faraday shields are designed and constructed to isolate the contents from electromagnetic radiation, or what we call radio waves and the magnetic component that accompanies them. No shield is perfect, however a radio won't work inside these cages. The person in one cage was wired to receive a mild shock from a device that would randomly administer the charge. The device was automatic and not controlled by the experimenter. This is important. The second person in the other cage was given a button to push each time he thought the first person received a shock. He also was wired to an EEG, which recorded the activity of his brain and nervous system during the experiment. The person pushing the button achieved a perfect score. A perfect zero. he failed to consciously perceive even one shock event correctly. However, his EEG record showed that his body detected every shock that was delivered to the person in the other booth. This experiment provides quite convincing proof that we all are connected in some way. In recent years, researchers have done studies that have found mechanisms in the human body that may account for this ability. Vittorio Belize, Giacomo Rizzolatti, and their colleagues at the University of Parma have identified an entirely new class of neurons in our brains. Called mirror neurons, these cells may be one important part of the mosaic that explains our social abilities. Evidence suggests that these cells derive their remarkable abilities from superconducting monoatomic elements, which are members of what are called the transition group of elements of the periodic table. This should help us understand why we all need to care for each other. If one person is hurting, we all feel it, at least on a subconscious level. Other experiments have shown that the distance separating the individuals in the experiment makes little difference. Expect the best from everyone. I don't remember what the original premise of this experiment was, but the results are quite startling. A group of volunteers was assembled and given a basic intelligence test. The volunteers were then divided into two groups, which were statistically equal. The environment for the experiment consisted of a reception room, with two rooms coming off of it, that were to be used for additional testing of the volunteers. A receptionist was acquired and told that her function was to assign the volunteers to one or the other of the rooms. She was told that the smarter ones would be tested in room A, and the others in room B. Her only function was to tell the subjects which room to go into when they arrived. She spent less than a minute with each. A hidden camera was focused on the receptionist, and the film studied at the end of the experiment. Remember now, that as a group, the subjects tested in room A were equal to the subjects tested in room B. All the receptionist was to do was to check which list the subjects were on when they arrived, and assign them to one of the two rooms. When the results of the second test were studied, the researchers found a very significant difference in the performance of the two groups. The group assigned to room A did much better on the test. The researchers then studied the film from the hidden camera and consulted with other experts. No one could identify any behavior or body language that might have been manifested by the receptionist that could account for these test discrepancies. It was expected that the two groups would have averaged about the same on the second test. Yet, there was a big difference. The receptionist was the only variable. What mechanism might have been responsible for these results? Mirror neurons? It sure appears that some subtle expectation was conveyed to the test subjects when they were assigned to their rooms, an expectation that manifested itself in considerable performance differences. Teachers and educators should take special note of these results. If we group children or people, and then subconsciously project subtle expectations toward that group, you more than likely will get to see your expectation. Tarot concepts. The 11-11 syndrome. We all can do what we do be do if we don't remain true to what we intend to do. Card 10 of the tarot, on one level, describes the concept that the nine preceding card concepts organize into a dynamic system. The card is usually titled the Wheel of Fortune. The wheel turns in a continuous process of birth, growth, death, and rest. It doesn't care about the Fool, card 0, and if the Fool chooses to remain so, he, like all the other forms of creation, will at some point be crushed like grain beneath the millstone, and recycled into the pool of cosmic energy. Card 11 tells us that the Magician card 1, the wise observing, knowing one, can control the wheel with only a gentle effort. Only gentle effort is effective. The Magician knows that within the subset of his reality, he can turn the wheel in either direction. Card 14 teaches us that all cosmic processes are reversible. In a practical sense, this means that we can plant the seed of our desire and then dig it up again. We do this in doing with our careless thoughts and undisciplined desires. If we plant a desire and then proceed to nurture thoughts that don't nourish our original intention, we undo the planting. This is a simple lesson, but it takes a lot of work to learn to do it correctly. The magic tortoise taught Tommy this a long time ago, and the universe keeps reminding Tommy to improve his ways by sending 11-11 messages. Read this children's story, for God's love and glory. Tommy meets the magic tortoise. This is the second part of Hudson's David Hudson at the Ranch lecture. Remember, this is one man's view of historical information. one must always keep searching for more clues to the historical mystery. In the following sound clips, David Hudson discusses his background studies of the white powder of gold. This lecture has been divided and displayed on two web pages, because some of the following material cannot be verified through standard scientific procedures. Over $8 million was spent confirming the material presented in the first part of the lecture. That part is very scientific, and has the support of researchers from Los Alamos and Sandia National Labs. Special note, the Merck Index 6 doesn't report on the toxicity of rhodium and pyridium. However, my experience with growing plants, etc. leads me to suspect that they would be similar to other heavy metals. I believe that Hudson's experiment used more than 1,000 times what should be considered a safe amount. Therefore, I strongly recommend that anyone working with these materials carefully study these web pages and their links. Symptoms of elemental toxicities, and there has to be something wrong. During the experiment, Hudson monitored the urine of his subject and reports that 80% of the rhodium was eliminated by the kidneys. This tells us something important. The kidneys' job is to remove excess amounts of anything that is in the blood. This is a very complex subject. Students and learners should start their study here and follow the links. The control of colloid stability through zeta potential. You need to have a complete understanding of water solutions and blood to work safely with these materials. Click here to read an interview with the person who took Hudson's monatomic rhodium and pyridium.